So how do we sound now? I think I got everything all straightened out here. There's always got to be problems, right? There's always got to be issues going on. I think we're all fixed. All right, so the horror show I see has begun early. It has begun a few days early here on YouTube. I am still tired from the night before. We had a live stream last night talking AEW Dynamite, which was a lot of fun. And so now we are going to talk WWE. What I'm going to do is I'm going to run down the entire card for you as it currently stands, including some matches that I think might be added to the show that haven't quite yet been added. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well, and along with predictions for how things may unfold this coming Sunday. So I am streaming here live. It is the day before SmackDown. SmackDown does not air until tomorrow night. I didn't want to wait that long to do the predictions. So there could be changes made to the card after the show tomorrow night. It's very possible they'll solidify another couple of matches on the show. We have AJ Styles defending his Intercontinental Championship on Friday against Matt Riddle. That match is coming up tomorrow on SmackDown. My prediction on that, I'm going to predict an assist in some way from King Corbin. I think Corbin's going to get involved. Corbin's going to really be Riddle's first feud. It's not really about AJ. I think Corbin, they want Corbin to kind of break Riddle in as far as on the SmackDown brand. So I think we'll get an assist from Corbin that either results in a win for AJ or a disqualification win for Riddle. Either way, I don't see him winning the Intercontinental Championship. And so there you go. That's my prediction there. If the match happens on Sunday, if as a result of what might happen tomorrow night, we get a King Corbin Matt Riddle match on Sunday at Extreme Rules, which I think is possible, I'm going to go with Riddle for the win there. I don't need to see Corbin beating Riddle. Riddle's got a good thing going so far on SmackDown. Doesn't need to be starting to lose matches to Baron Corbin, of all people. They also teased a tables match at the end of SmackDown last week with Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura, putting New Day through a table. And so would not at all shock me if that gets added to the show for the tag team titles on Sunday. If it gets added, New Day is my pick to retain. Again, these matches are not yet official, but they may turn out to be. Another match that we know will not be happening on Sunday, but it is happening on Monday, is Randy Orton against The Big Show. It will be a non-sanctioned match coming up on Raw this Monday night. It was added this past week. This is a match that will have SummerSlam implications. This is a match that will have SummerSlam implications because Randy Orton, I think most people probably think, it seems pretty obvious to me, Randy Orton is going to be next in line for a WWE Championship match with Drew McIntyre. And if that's the case, the match is likely to happen at SummerSlam. You can't have Randy Orton going in there and losing to The Big Show. I mean, I know he's big and all, but he can't be losing to The Big Show. So that looks to be the next WWE title match. You know, Edge is out. They can't do part three with Edge and Orton because Edge is going to be gone for a while. And so there really is no other obvious match for Orton. And there is no other obvious challenger for Drew McIntyre coming out of this show once he gets past Dolph Ziggler. So it only makes sense that Randy Orton would be next in line for a crack at the belt. So Orton is going to win against Big Show. That's my prediction on that. And fortunately for Ric Flair, if WWE will not send him home for his own safety, then I think Randy Orton will. The only question is it via RKO or is it via punt kick? We've seen Edge get the punt, right? We've seen Christian get the punt. I'm going to predict that Randy Orton is going to be punting Ric Flair back into quarantine. It's my prediction for next Monday. Because remember, Randy Orton has no friends. That's his whole character. That's his whole gimmick. He doesn't have friends. Turns on everybody. Who would want to be friends with this guy? Got to have eyes in the back of your head. He's kicking people in the head. And poor Ric Flair, you know, this guy is out there and he is completely oblivious. He's completely oblivious to what's going on. Dawn in the chat says, why do I feel like I'm trapped in a time machine? It does kind of feel that way, right? Randy Orton against The Big Show. Ric Flair is involved. What year is it? I'll tell you what year it is. It's 2020, which is probably the worst year. It's the worst year, one of the worst years anyway of my life. Can't wait for this year to be over. Unfortunately, I don't think 2021 is looking too good either right now. Now, you know, Raw Monday night hit an all-time low rating on USA. And I'm going to talk more about those ratings on Sunday, episode 661. I got a lot to say about that. So, you know, them holding off until Raw next week to do the match and not doing it at the pay-per-view, it makes sense. I can understand why they would want to do that. They're looking for any kind of boost, right, that they can give Raw on Monday. So I understand that. I get that. They're promoting it as an unsanctioned match. I think it'll work. I actually think it'll work. I think that they're probably going to get they're going to reverse the trend of the last few weeks. And I think Raw will actually improve and do a little bit better this week. Slightly better. I don't know that they'll even get beyond 2 million. I doubt it. So even if Raw does a little bit better, though, right? What does it mean? So you pop a slightly higher rating 1 week. What does it mean? What are you really getting out of it? You know, that's not any kind of plan for the future. It's a Band-Aid. It's a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. They got big problems on Monday Night Raw. And popping a rating 1 week with Randy Orton and The Big Show in an unsanctioned match is not going to solve all your problems. But anyway, Orton's going to win. He's going to go on to SummerSlam to challenge for the championship. All right, let's get into this here. We've got, on Sunday, Apollo Crews. Apollo Crews will defend his United States Championship against MVP. The same MVP who looks like he may soon be recruiting Cedric Alexander. He may be looking to expand his roster of talent. And it looks like they could be doing a little bit of a split maybe between Cedric and Rick O'Shea. So we'll see where that goes. But anyway, we have not seen Apollo on TV in a few weeks. He's been off selling. I assume he's just selling the injuries from the Full Nelson a few weeks ago at the hands of Bobby Lashley. This will be his triumphant return here on the show. I think MVP is a great talker. I think he's got a great presence on the show as a manager or an agent, whatever you want to call him. That suit he was wearing on Monday last week was just fantastic. The man's fashion sense is on point. I want to know where he got that suit from. It looked like something that kids at summer camp should be sliding on. But I don't need to be seeing him in the ring. That was kind of the point that I was getting at here. We don't need to be seeing him in the ring. Manager, the VIP lounge, I got no problem with that. Why are we seeing him wrestling on pay-per-view? I don't get it. When he came back at the Royal Rumble, I mean, he got jobbed out in the Rumble. I think the next night, right, he lost to Rey Mysterio. And then he was like, I'm done. I'm retired. Then he got a tryout as a backstage agent. All of a sudden, he's wrestling matches on TV. He was wrestling in a suit the other week. How did we go from that? How did we go from retirement and being an agent backstage to being back in the ring? How does that happen? Should be an easy win for Apollo Crews, which I would have to assume then leads to a championship match with Lashley. You know, Crews and Lashley for the U.S. title. Probably a title win, maybe even, for Bobby Lashley. I mean, how many times can Bobby Lashley lose? Then we have Jeff Hardy, who, in case you've been living under a rock and you haven't been watching television, Jeff Hardy, WWE wants you to be very well aware, is an alcoholic. He's got a drinking problem. He's an addict. He's a junkie. Jeff the Junkie. I'm surprised they haven't given him that nickname on TV. He takes on Sheamus in a bar fight. Jeff had been scheduled to appear in court this morning. I was waiting before we went live here. I wanted to see what was going on with his court date. I know on that Chronicle, which I'm going to talk about in a second, he was talking about there being a court date coming up, and today was the day, and it has been delayed yet again. This is stemming from his last DWI arrest in October. So he still hasn't had his court appearance for the DWI last fall. And he was supposed to be in court today, and because of the pandemic, it has been bumped. There's Jeff. Perfect timing. Creepy Jeff Hardy Super Chat pops up as I'm talking about Creepy Jeff Hardy. So his court date has been delayed until September 28th, so he's still left in the dark about what's going to happen. And you know that WWE is also waiting to find out what's going to happen, because it's not like this is his first offense. So there has to be concern on their part that there could be repercussions, frankly, as there probably should be, for that last arrest. And if so, what does that mean? You know, does that mean any kind of jail time? Does that mean he has to do some kind of program? I don't know. That's all on hold right now. But WWE did debut a chronicle, a special chronicle. They have these like little documentaries. And so they had a chronicle on Jeff on the WWE Network that just debuted. It's only half an hour long. It's actually very short. But I did, you know, check it out. It did premiere the other day. And it covered the period from the end of May until, I think, last week. So again, a very short period of time that it covered. And there's one part, and I kind of jotted this down. Because, you know, I've often talked about Jeff and all the times that he's fucked up time after time after time. And you just kind of get to a point where it's like, I mean, how many chances does a person get? And now they're doing the whole redemption story with him. But there was one part of the special that was kind of emotional. He was talking about WrestleMania last year. He says his knee went out on him at WrestleMania last year. And then he had to have the knee surgery. He was only supposed to be out for about, I think he said, 6 months maybe. He ended up being out a lot longer than 6 months. He was out for about 9 months. And he didn't know if he was going to be able to come back. And so he starts drinking and he's getting blackout drunk. And he told this story about being on his porch and he passed out. So this guy's pissed drunk. He passes out on his porch. And all of a sudden his daughter, who's 4 years old, brings him out a blanket and a pillow. She brings a blanket and a pillow out to him on the porch and says, I helped you out, Dad. Even when you're drunk, you're my friend. You're my best friend. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, you would hope that a story like that would be a wake-up call for somebody. And maybe it will be for Jeff Hardy. I hope for his sake and I hope for his family's sake that it is. That was really freaking sad to hear that. A four-year-old who doesn't really have any concept of exactly what's going on is going to see her father like that on that porch. So I would certainly hope that that's... I hope it is. I hope it's a wake-up call for him. But anyway, we have this bar fight. So what do you do with a guy who has a drinking problem? You put him in a bar fight. You put him in a bar fight. Of course, because that's what you do. That is what you do. I figured that this is the spot where he gets his revenge. I mean, obviously, the feel-good moment at the end is Jeff getting his revenge on Sheamus. I'm predicting a Jeff Hardy win. I think he's going to force Sheamus to drink until he vomits, because that's what Vince McMahon loves. He loves peeing, and he loves poop, and he loves vomit. I could hear him laughing now. I can hear him laughing now. So that's my prediction. Jeff, and also, it's my prediction, and it's my hope. Because I want this to be it. This has to be the end. No more. No more matches. No more bar fights. No more bullshit talking about the drinking and this and that. Let him win and let him and Sheamus move on to other programs and other opponents. I'm not a fan of this storyline. This needs to be the end. Period. End of story. Bayley. Now we get into the women's stuff. Bayley defends her SmackDown Women's Championship against Nikki Cross. Nikki earned the match after winning a fatal four-way over her partner Alexa Bliss, Dana Brooke, and Lacey Evans. Bayley has two belts, right? It's Bayley two belts. She comes out with the tag team title, the SmackDown Women's title. The storyline with Sasha Banks. Sasha's also going for two belts herself on the show, which I'll talk about. She's challenging for a championship as well. Bayley should not be losing this championship before she has the match with Sasha. You've come this far. You've been building this story for so long. You've been teasing things here and there. You're going to take the title off of Bayley and put it on Nikki Cross? I don't think so. That would be a dumb move. That would be stupid. So Bayley should not be losing this belt. Whenever the split happens, and look, I've been enjoying them of late. I know some people are sick and tired of Sasha and Bayley. Sasha and Bayley, to me, have been one of the saving graces of these shows. There isn't a whole lot to like about these quarantine shows in the PC. Bayley has made the most of it. Sasha, it's good to see Sasha finally getting TV time after so long of just not doing anything. And I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it almost to the point where, you know, with SummerSlam no longer being held in Boston, I kind of wish they maybe could hold off on the match a little bit longer. But, you know, I mean, how long do you wait? You know, what are you waiting for? You know, how much longer can you go until crowds come back? I mean, you're talking months. You're talking many months And so if you're not going to be able to do it, then you may as well just go ahead and move ahead with your story. So SummerSlam is probably the right place for it to happen. If that was the original plan, I would not deviate from that plan. I think Bayley retains. I think Bayley retains, and she does so with help from Sasha. Here's how I see this playing out. I think she retains. I think Sasha either is at ring, maybe Sasha and Alexa are at ringside, or maybe Sasha comes out. She'll provide the assist. And then that plays into the other women's championship match on this show. Sasha Banks challenges Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship. Yes, we have a SmackDown star challenging for a Raw Championship. Just pretend there's no brand split. Just do like what WWE does. If you pretend that there's no brand split, then it makes sense. Let's just close our eyes and pretend. Let's just ignore that little plot point. I'm very much looking forward to this match. I can actually excuse the lack of logic here because I think it is going to be a good match. I think it's going to be, look, it could be one of the show-stealing matches on the card. I want to see how, there's two matches I'm kind of looking forward to. I'm looking forward to this one, and I'm actually kind of looking forward to the Swamp fight. I just am curious how that's going to play out, personally. But here you have two of the very best women they have on that roster. I loved the way that Sasha played off of her loss to Asuka. 2 years ago on Monday Night Raw, two and a half years ago, I made mention of this on the podcast a few weeks ago. Asuka, if you remember, Asuka won the Women's Royal Rumble, right? The very first ever Women's Royal Rumble match back in 2018. And the next night, she had a singles match against Sasha Banks, and she beat Sasha. So WWE tweeted out a photo of Sasha on the mat. She had a tear running down her face. She's looking up at the lights. And Asuka tweets, "Traces of tears, so beautiful, like a cherry blossom." That was what she tweeted out. And this is 2.5 years ago. A few weeks ago, on Raw, Sasha's got Asuka in the Asuka lock, tweets out a photo of her with Asuka in the hold, and she puts the caption, "So beautiful, like a cherry blossom." And I like it when they play off history like that. I just love shit like that. So, I think this is going to be real good. Now, here's how I see this going down. Okay, I already told you what I think is going to happen in the Bayley match. Sasha is going to provide the assist to Bayley earlier in the show. If we assume Bayley's match is going to go on first, okay, Sasha's going to help her win. Of course, if Sasha's match goes first, then this blows my whole idea out of the water. So that's going to happen first. Sasha, of course, she wants two belts like Bayley. Bayley's got two belts. Sasha wants two for herself. And so she's going to expect her friend to come out and be there for her and pay her back. Unfortunately, Bayley's help backfires and Asuka retains. Asuka retains the championship. And now on television the next week, you can begin, you know, obviously there's trouble in paradise now. There's some major issues between the two of them. The problems begin, and that eventually builds to a match at SummerSlam. You know, I came out and I helped you, and then you come out and you screwed me out of winning the Raw Women's title. That's all the impetus you need to begin the meltdown between these two, and again, to build to a SummerSlam match. Since you screwed me out of the Raw Women's title, guess what? I want your title. The setup here is very simple. It's a very simple setup to this match. So that's how I see that going down. Now on Raw Talk, which I don't watch, but on Raw Talk after the show, I mean, for God's sake, so you have 3 hours of Raw, you think I'm going to watch Raw Talk? Have you lost your mind? You think I'm going to watch another half an hour of anything remotely connected to Monday Night Raw? I mean, Raw Talk may be a good show. 3.5 hours of Monday Night Raw. That ain't happening. That ain't happening. But on Raw Talk Monday night, Kairi Sane told Asuka she is ready to challenge her for the Raw Women's title once she gets past Sasha Banks. And so they're teasing an Asuka-Kairi match. Kairi, it looks like, is going to be heading back to Japan soon. There have been some reports. I think Tokyo Sports had something claiming that Kairi, I think, just got married and she's going to, you know, they're going to be moving back to Japan. So it sounds like by the end of the summer, Kairi Sane is going to be gone from WWE. Now, she may still work with the company in some capacity. Yeah, there's been talk of her being some kind of an ambassador maybe or something like that. But it does seem like her time in the ring in this company is coming to an end. And I think a match with Asuka would be a hell of a way for her to go out. Kairi Sane against Asuka and her big send-off. Now she either wins the championship, win or go home. I'd love to see it. We have, well, before I even get into this, I got a lot to say about this next match, but let me play catch up here. We've got Tenorio 128. What's going on, Tenorio? Asuka versus Kairi at SummerSlam. Maybe. I mean, if Kairi is leaving, I almost see that as maybe being like a big Raw match they blow off if they want Shayna, right? I mean, Shayna just came back. Is there even enough time? I mean, I guess they could. It depends on when they, you know, if they're going to do Shayna and Asuka at some point. Because to me, that would be the SummerSlam match. You can do Kairi on Raw. But, you know, Asuka and Kairi at SummerSlam. It's funny, like, that we're sitting here even saying this. Like, oh, they should do Asuka and Kairi at SummerSlam and not on Raw. As if these shows aren't in the same building. It's just such a weird feeling. Like, to even have this conversation doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, right? Like, it's literally in the same building. So what difference does it make? Every show is the same. One airs on TV, the other airs on the network. Other than that, what's the difference? Same ring, same building, same audience. Doesn't really matter, I guess. You could do Asuka and Kairi on Raw, you could do Asuka and Shayna at SummerSlam. Unfortunately, it's all the same. John Falchetta with the $5. Pritchard is a recovering addict himself and should know better than to do this to Jeff Hardy. It is a disgrace. It's a good point. Now, Jeff Hardy will talk about how, you know, he likes the fact that this story can be like an inspiration to others. I find it very hard to believe that either A, this was his idea, or B, when it was initially presented to him, that he was all gung-ho about doing it. Like, that may be his way of justifying it now, trying to find a silver lining in what is really just a shitty story. But I've heard Jeff, maybe in the Chronicle even, he was talking about that. Yeah, I think if Jeff had his way when this was initially pitched, I don't know that they would be doing this storyline. Rey Mysterio against Seth Rollins. You have to extract your opponent's eye in order to win the match. That is the rule. Logically, how this is not an unsanctioned match, I have no idea. How is the company going to sanction a match where you have to extract your opponent's eye? This hasn't been explained. We're getting an unsanctioned match Monday night, the very next night with Big Show and Randy Orton. There's no stipulation saying that I've got to pull your tongue out of your mouth, or I've got to pull your eyeball out, or I got to do this, or I got to do that. So that's a little strange. I think this is one of the stupidest things that I have ever heard. Maybe they're just going for broke with the gimmick. We got to get people interested. We got to get people subscribing to the network. I know, we'll have a match where you have to pluck your opponent's eyeball out. That'll get 100,000 new people subscribing to our network. I wouldn't be so sure about that. So, supposedly, they're going to be using CGI effects to simulate the extraction of the eye. Like I said, this just sounds so stupid. This sounds, maybe it'll be so bad it's good. You know, maybe I'll have a lot of fun reviewing this on Sunday night. I'm going to be all amped up on Sunday night when I talk about this stuff. Maybe in the end it'll be so cheesy, it'll actually be entertaining. But this is stupid for what is supposed to be a very serious feud, right? Rey Mysterio, they did the whole injury angle with him. His son is involved. And then they have to introduce this campy, just dumb nonsense. Now, Mysterio is working without a contract. He is not re-signed yet, anyway, with the company. He asked for a pay raise. They said no, but his son is still under contract with WWE. His son is training at the Performance Center, so now, it's up in the air what he's going to do. If he's not re-signing, then his eyeball is probably getting popped out. And then he can show up on Dynamite with an eye patch in a few weeks and challenge Cody for the TNT title. Yeah, he's free and clear to go next week if he wanted to. I don't think he would do that. For his son's sake, I don't think he would do that. But all I've heard for months now is that Rey Mysterio really wants to tag with his son. He really wants to do at least one tag team match with Dominic. So if that's really what he wants to do, then, you know, maybe he'll stick around. But if he is staying, I still don't think he's winning this match. Seth Rollins is my pick to win. Whether Rey is re-signing or not, I think he's losing this match. And I think, look, maybe they will do the tag team match at SummerSlam. Maybe it will be Rey Mysterio, even with an eye patch, and Dominic against Seth Rollins and Murphy. Maybe that's the goal here. Let's get to the tag team match. You know, we'll have the singles match to then get to the tag team match. Rey and Dominic against Rollins and Murphy would be my thought as far as SummerSlam goes. You know, since the company still hasn't filed a missing persons report on Austin Theory, who has not been mentioned at all for like 3 weeks. I don't know where Austin Theory is. No mention of him now for 3 weeks. Does he have COVID? Is he in some kind of trouble? I thought his name bubbled up a few weeks ago in the speaking out stuff, but I could be wrong. Is it that? Is it COVID? You know, did Austin, did he show up to the Performance Center and somebody mistook him for Austin Aries and said, "You're barred, goodbye." And they had security drag him away kicking and screaming. I don't know. I have no idea. It's anybody's guess. It's anybody's guess. But the outcome of this match, I don't think that it's as reliant on what Rey is going to do contract-wise. Like I said, I think Rollins is going to win. I think Rollins needs this win more. Rollins and Murphy lost to Mysterio and Kevin Owens 2 weeks ago when Murphy got pinned. And this past Monday, Rollins lost again. He lost to Kevin Owens at WrestleMania. They had a WrestleMania rematch, and Rollins got pinned. He lost again. What kind of cult leader is this? Who wants to follow somebody who keeps losing? At some point, you've got to win. Right? So this seems like the perfect time for him to pick up a win. But this CGI eyeball nonsense just, ugh, God. Forget CGI. You know what? If you're going to go cornball with this, you want to go cornball with the effects, popping people's eyes out and stuff. You want to go down that road? Go down the road that they went with Friday the 13th Part 3. Since we're talking about the horror show, right? I've got my Michael Myers shirt on here. We're all about horror this weekend. It's like Halloween in July. You want to go all the way with it? Friday the 13th Part 3, which is my favorite of all the Jason movies. Jason literally squeezed a man's head. He squeezed a man's head until his eye popped out. That was like the big scene towards the end of the movie. And it was in 3D. So the whole gimmick with Part 3 was it was like Part 3D. So when the eye came out, the only reason they even did this was, you see the guy, the eye comes out, and it comes right out at you. And this was the days of practical effects, not CGI. Right down to, like, you could see the wire behind the eye. Like, you could see the wire pushing the eye out. Look, I'm a big fan of good old-fashioned practical effects. One of my favorite movies is The Thing, the John Carpenter remake of The Thing from 1982. I'm pretty sure that was all practical effects, and it's one of the creepiest movies I've ever seen to this very day. So a lot of those old horror movies in terms of like the practical effects and puppets and latex and all the different things they use, to me, that's a lot scarier than a lot of the CGI stuff they use today. There's a place for CGI. Pro wrestling is not the place for CGI. It's just not. But if you're going to do it like Jason did it. I do it the Jason Voorhees way. That's my motto. It's what I live by. It's my code. I share a name with the guy. I feel like we have a kinship together. Although I don't know why I'm wearing a Michael Myers shirt if I'm talking up Jason Voorhees. Braun Strowman. The horror theme continues here. Braun Strowman, who has had the lamest run so far as the Universal Champion, I swear to you, I would argue just as bad, if not worse, than Goldberg. You know, at least Goldberg was a two-time Universal Champion the first time. At least he had that kick-ass match with Goldberg with, that would be a match, with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 33. Just a six-minute smash-mouth sprint, beating the hell out of each other, big moves. That was a great match. That was the best possible match you could ask for from Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg. I mean, that might have been the match of WrestleMania 33. Yeah, the moment was, the big moment, of course, was the Hardy Boys return that night, but the match, I thought, was excellent. So, at least there was something redeeming. There was something of value about that Goldberg run. There is nothing so far, nothing redeeming about Braun Strowman as the Universal Champion. He lucked into the spot. He was never supposed to be the Universal Champion. Roman Reigns went home, so he got the spot. And what has he done since then? They put him in a handicap match against Miz and Morrison that was played up for total comedy. Now, he had that one match with Bray, with Funhouse Bray, that was, it was all right. It was really nothing to sing home about. What else has this guy done? You know, he was just on social media. He was celebrating 100 days as the Universal Champion. What is there to celebrate? You're keeping it warm for the next guy. You're keeping it warm for the Fiend. This has been a very uneventful run. Frankly, so has Jon Moxley's run as the AEW champion, but I would argue this is even worse. This run has been even worse than Moxley's run as the champion. At least Moxley, there's a few things that he's... I didn't hate that match with Brody Lee. I thought they had a good solid brawl at Double or Nothing, but that's also been a very disappointing run so far. So now he gets to battle Bray Wyatt Classic. I'm going to call him Bray Wyatt Classic. In a non-title swamp fight, the championship is not on the line. This was supposedly being filmed on location this week, possibly today. They were bringing in a stunt coordinator. So they're going all the way. They're going to film. This is going to be the big cinematic match on the show. Now, I don't know if outside of the CGI, if Rollins and Rey is going to be cinematic or not, but this is the big cinematic match on this show. They usually try to have one now. It feels like one every pay-per-view. Bray has temporarily reverted back to his old persona for this match, or fight, again, whatever you want to call it. I'm all for a good on-location cinematic match, you know, get out of the performance center. I really don't have an issue with that. Are they going to that well too many times? It feels that way. There is that little issue of the House of Horrors match. Speaking of horror, the House of Horrors match at Payback back in 2017 between Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, right? They had that abandoned house in the middle of the woods, in the middle of nowhere. And I feel like I'm in the minority on actually liking the House of Horrors portion of that match. Because if you remember, that portion of the match ended, and then I believe they ended up back in the arena. I believe they ended up back in the building. I didn't like that. I thought that sucked. But I actually kind of liked the House of Horrors portion. I feel like I'm in the minority on that, because that match gets a lot of hate to this day. That was, at the time, WWE's answer to Impact's Final Deletion with Broken Matt. House of Horrors was not Final Deletion, but that was, at that time, that was sort of their version of that. That was their answer to it. I think the point is, I think this could work. It's all about the execution. How is it filmed? How is it shot? Is it all action? Is it boring? Is it just, they're in a swamp and they're just sort of brooding around? Like, it's all in the execution. It's all in how it goes down. I would rather see these two in this kind of environment than I would in just a straight match in the PC. Here's what I'd like to see. I am predicting a Braun Strowman win. Braun Strowman is my pick to win. All signs point. I know all signs point to a Bray Wyatt win because it's non-title. So Bray could win, but not win the championship and keep the feud going. So A, it's non-title. And B, Braun won the first match. So if you're going to build to a third chapter, should they not go into it one win apiece? I'm not saying that that doesn't make sense. It absolutely makes sense. And I'm sure a lot of people, because of that reason, are going to be picking Bray Wyatt to win the match. I am not convinced that that is going to be the outcome. I'm not convinced. I'm going to say that Braun Strowman... Now, I don't know what the rules are. It's called a swamp fight. Does it end when you throw the guy into the swamp? Do you have to pin him on the ground or make him submit? Like, I don't know. They haven't explained the rules. But I'm going to predict that Braun throws Bray into the swamp. That version of Bray... never to be seen again. So he throws him into the swamp. But then, the Fiend emerges from the swamp. The Fiend emerges from the swamp and he drags Braun down into the swamp with him. You want a Jason Voorhees analogy? Think of the end of the first movie. When Jason drags the girl off the boat down into the lake and then she wakes up in the hospital. That's sort of what I'm thinking of here in terms of what happens with the Fiend showing up, dragging him down. I think Braun should win because I think it makes the story better. I just think it works and makes for a better story. Funhouse Bray could not beat Braun Strowman. He lost. He got pinned. Bray Wyatt Classic, cult leader Bray, can't beat him either. So what does he do? What happens? He can't beat him. His other two alter egos can't get the job done. Therefore, he summons the Fiend. The Fiend is the one personality that can get the job done. And that's why we ultimately see the Fiend. Why else would we see the Fiend? Only if these other incarnations of Bray couldn't get the job done against Braun would we then see the Fiend. That's why I think Braun has to win. That's why I think Braun should win this match. Turns to the Fiend to get the job done. Now, let's say the Fiend wins the championship. Let's say they go to SummerSlam, right? And they've got the Fiend wrestling, Braun Strowman. And the Fiend wins the championship back. I was thinking about this. Who's the first challenger? Who's the first challenger to the Fiend's Universal title if he wins the belt back? And I was looking at that SmackDown roster, and honestly, there aren't a lot of good choices on the babyface side. There just aren't. You know, you have your people that have already wrestled him. Miz is not going to wrestle him. Daniel Bryan's a babyface, but he's already, been there, done that. We've already seen The Fiend and Daniel Bryan. I wouldn't go back to that just yet. And maybe down the road. So I'm looking at that roster, and honestly, Jeff Hardy may be the only babyface that kind of makes sense. He's still a big enough name and a big enough star that you can justify putting him in that spot and having him contend for the championship. All the more reason why he needs to beat Sheamus on this show. He needs a big win if he's going to eventually challenge, for the title. I feel like we've seen Jeff in some feuds. I always go back to the feud with Umaga. I thought Jeff and Umaga had great chemistry together. And Umaga was a similar build. He was more of a brawler. And they had incredible chemistry together. And it makes me wonder if we could potentially see the same kind of chemistry with Jeff and with Bray. Although with that Fiend character, it's hard, right? Because you're not going to see the Fiend in there doing traditional wrestling holds. So it's a little bit different. But I'm thinking Jeff Hardy. Now, it's possible that his pending court appearance in September could dissuade them from wanting to put him in a big position like that and challenging for the championship. I don't know where the company's head is at on that. If they're going to kind of hold back on doing anything major with Jeff until they know how his court, how his legal situation is going to sort itself out. So that could play a role in this. But the only other thing about this is that the Fiend likes to, dig into people's pasts. He did it with John Cena. He did it with Daniel Bryan. And the history that he himself has with a lot of these different people. He's doing it now with Braun Strowman. I don't need to see The Fiend do what Sheamus has been doing and dig into Jeff's past and Jeff the drunk and all that stuff. I don't need to see that. So I don't know. Maybe that doesn't work. Or they would just have to do something a little bit different. You can't go down that same road. You've already done that. Nobody wants to hear about Jeff Hardy and his drinking problems anymore. They don't want it to be exploited anymore. When this feud with Sheamus is over, they have to move past that to something else. But that just feels like something The Fiend would do. So I have an idea to propose. If not Jeff Hardy, how about this for an idea? Finn Balor. Finn Balor has been hanging around the NXT brand now. He's been on NXT for many months now. I don't know if it's been quite a year. It hasn't been a year yet, but almost a year. Almost a year. And interestingly enough, next month is going to be 1 year since we saw The Fiend squash Finn Balor at SummerSlam when The Fiend made his debut in the ring. We never did get a rematch. We never did get The Fiend against The Demon. Finn went to NXT. He has not been back on the main roster since. He's not been back on Raw. He has not been back on SmackDown. What if The Fiend gets the championship back and over 1 year later, after being squashed at SummerSlam, who should return but Finn Balor? To get an ounce, a measure of revenge on The Fiend, and then we can get The Fiend against The Demon. Seemed like there was money in that match, and they never did it. Now they can kind of revisit that. And you add another babyface to the SmackDown roster, a roster that, frankly, is in dire need of some babyfaces. Now, Balor's had some great matches in NXT. I kind of feel like we've hit a wall with him there. What else is left for him to do? You know, he's wrestled Ciampa, he's wrestled Gargano, he's wrestled Damian Priest, Adam Cole, Keith Lee. What is left for him to do? Send him to SmackDown. They could use another babyface name on that roster. So, chew on that idea. Let me know what you think about that. Johnny A with the $5. What's going on, Johnny? Pop Ray's eye out like in Casino, head in a vice. Please don't tell my boss that I'm checking out your stream. Well, it'll be our little secret. And Inner Alchemist with the super chat. What's with WWE not explaining things? Are you new here? That's like the most evergreen super chat that I have ever gotten. Like, you could send that exact super chat message to me any stream, any month, any year, and it would still be accurate. How could you even ask that question? There is no answer to the question. We've been saying this now for years. That is the most evergreen super chat message that I have ever received. It says you can literally use that anytime, and it would always be accurate. I love it. I love it. And then we get to the main event, or at least what I figure is going to be the main event on this show. Drew McIntyre defending the WWE Championship against Dolph Ziggler. Ziggler will not reveal the stipulation for his match, since he gets to choose the stip. He will not reveal it until bell time on Sunday, but there may have been a spoiler leak. There may have been a spoiler leak. How legitimate it is, I don't know. Seems legit, but you never know with these things. And it was apparently leaked on Facebook, a Facebook advertisement that came out that claims that the match on Sunday will be a tables, ladders, and chairs match, that we are going to get a TLC match between Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. If that is true, I would have to assume that there will be no TLC pay-per-view this year, because why would you do a TLC match on a show that is not TLC? And by the way, I am all for eliminating some of these themed pay-per-views. We don't need a pay-per-view called TLC. We don't need a pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell. We haven't needed that for a decade. I hate that they turn those shows into gimmick shows, because every year it's time for Hell in a Cell. You use the Hell in a Cell when you have a feud worthy of using it for. So if they want to get rid of TLC, fine with me. But it makes me wonder, are we not getting a TLC? And maybe there is something to these reports about there being an Evolution 2. Maybe Evolution 2 is going to take the spot of what TLC would have been. Just me speculating, I don't know. But anyway, that's the belief, that's the rumor, that it's going to be a TLC match. You know, McIntyre and Ziggler in a ladder match would be very good. So that's basically what a TLC match is. It's a glorified ladder match. But Ziggler had teased a stipulation that we had never seen before, right? He was on the bump a few weeks ago. And he was talking about how it's going to be something you've never seen before. This would not really qualify as something that we haven't seen before. I was thinking, you know, with all this talk of you know, I'm going to take you to Claymore Country and all this kind of stuff, that they would borrow a page from what he and Vicky Guerrero did years ago when Ziggler wrestled Edge for the World Heavyweight title at the Royal Rumble in 2011. And if you remember that match, you know, that was a match where Edge was banned from using his finishing move. He was banned from using the spear. If he used the spear, he would have surrendered. He would have lost the World Heavyweight Championship. And I think with the ref bump or whatever happened, I think he used it anyway. But that was the stip. So that's what I was thinking. It could still happen. But anyway, that's the report that's floating around right now. The outcome here cannot be in doubt. The outcome here should not be in doubt. The outcome here cannot be in doubt. If Drew McIntyre is going to lose that championship, it's going to be to Randy Orton at SummerSlam. And I'm not even saying I like that idea, but if he's going to lose the championship in the next couple of months, it's going to be to Randy Orton. It is not going to be to Dolph Ziggler. That would be a terrible idea. So it's not going to be Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler has no business even challenging at this point for the WWE title. You don't gift the title to the placeholder. And that's what Dolph Ziggler is. He is the placeholder. He is the warm body for Drew McIntyre to be in the ring with en route to a Randy Orton or a Brock Lesnar or whoever it is that he's going to be wrestling at SummerSlam. It's not going to be Dolph Ziggler. Given who's involved in the match, I expect a very good match. If Drew McIntyre can go out there and have a great match with Bobby Lashley, like they did at Backlash, there's no reason that Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler can't have every bit as good of a match, if not better. I'd be disappointed if they didn't. But it's just hard to get invested because it's Dolph Ziggler. It's 2020. I mean, do I really need to go through the history of Dolph Ziggler in this company? Why would people care? Why would people be invested in this match? Why? Because the two of them have history together on Raw, because Drew and him were tag team partners for a while. Who cares? Who gives a shit? There's nothing investable in this match. So they should have a great match, but Drew McIntyre is going to retain the WWE Championship. Now, I am going to be live here with you again on Sunday night. And when I join you on Sunday, I'm going to, as part of my live stream, I'm going to be the master of ceremonies for this contest that you are looking at right now on your screen. WrestleRumble.com is hosting a pick'em contest, a giveaway where for a $1 entry, and by the way, you can enter as many times as you want, but for a $1 entry, that's all you need to do to enter. Totally random drawing. There's going to be three winners chosen by yours truly. Third place, second place, first place. And there you see on your screen, third place, Smoking Skull, Stone Cold Belt replica. Second place, you get the two classic WWF title replicas. And the first place winner, grand prize, you're going to walk away with three belts. The classic WCW United States Championship, the classic WWE United States Championship, and the IWGP United States Championship. So that's coming up on Sunday. I hope you guys will be able to join me. I'm going to be giving away six belts. That's a lot of belts. That is a lot of belts that we're going to be giving away. So I am looking forward to that. And I hope that you will be able to join me. I hope you will be able to join me. Zombified guitarist, more evergreen than hello, Jason. Yes, that super chat was more evergreen than somebody saying hello. It was more evergreen than somebody saying goodbye. I mean, what's with WWE not explaining things? I mean, it's like the age-old question. There is no answer. I don't have a good answer for you. They don't care. They don't think it's an important enough thing. There's your answer. It's the best answer I could come up with for you. Now, I want to, I got some more super chats coming in. I do want to take some calls and just hear, I was hoping anyway, to hear what you guys thought maybe of the pay-per-view. And I don't know, it's weird because it sounds like the audio that I'm getting in my ear when I put the headphones on is on a delay. And so that would be not good when it comes to trying to hear the... Here are the calls. I don't think that's going to work. So we may just have to cut things short here. Walking Tall with the $5. Have you or will you address Meltzer's tweet about AEW tag teams being better than 80s tag teams? Love to hear your opinion. Yeah, I don't know about that. I didn't see the tweet. I can go look it up, I guess, but, I mean, was he referring to just 80s teams in general? Was he referring to 80s WWE teams? Because the idea that you would say that any tag team division right now in wrestling is better than what the tag team scene looked like in wrestling in the 80s, when you had the Midnight Express, the Rock and Roll Express, the Road Warriors, Demolition, the Bulldogs, the Killer Bees, the Hart Foundation, the Rockers, the Brainbusters. That's not even all of them. Those are just the ones that spring to mind. That's ridiculous. I mean, that's just a crazy... that's a ridiculous statement to make. I don't agree with that. I mean, that's... Let's be honest here. The 80s in general was the shit, right? There's a lot of... I will say this. The wrestlers today... And I think you would have wrestlers from the 80s say the same thing. The wrestlers of today, far more athletic. Physically, just athletic. maybe not as big and muscled up as they were in the 80s, but in terms of like the things that they can do in the ring, those guys in the 80s, I mean, they couldn't hold a candle to what these guys can do today. But to suggest that the tag team scene in the 1980s is somehow inferior to the tag team scene of today, and you're saying he's comparing it just to AEW, is that what you're saying? I gotta see this. Now you're gonna make me go and look. I gotta see what's going on here. Now you are going to make me go look for Mr. Meltzer's tweet. So let's take a look and see. Let us take a look and see what Dave Meltzer had to say here. Now, I don't know when he supposedly posted this tweet, so it would help maybe to let me know when this tweet went up. Yeah, let me know when the tweet went up. I have his page open, but I don't know when he posted this. Was it today? Was it yesterday? Yeah, let me know. Let me know, and I'll bring it up here. But yeah, I can't agree with that. It's insane. I mean, there's a lot that I like about wrestling today, but when you start making comparisons to the 1980s, when wrestling to me was just at its peak, it really was. I mean, WWE obviously took off in the 80s on a national scale, but you had the NWA. Your world class was like, they were like rock and roll stars there. World class for a while down in Texas was like the most amazing thing. They had Mid-South wrestling, which a lot of people talk about Mid-South wrestling. The wrestling business was a lot healthier back then than it was now. But just the quality of tag team wrestling. You ask me what the golden age of tag team wrestling is, I'm going to tell you, it's probably the 1980s. It's probably the 1980s. So yeah, I need to... Somebody in the chat, let me know. A week ago? I'm not going to find it from a week ago. I thought this was from like yesterday or today. I'm not going through a week's worth of Meltzer tweets. Have you lost your mind? Look at this. This guy posts like 20 times a day, 30 times a day. I'm not going through this. Couldn't pay me enough money to do this. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that live on the air. So, I can't bring myself to do that. I cannot bring myself to do that. But yes, the answer is the 80s. You want an answer? The answer is the 1980s. The 1980s were the shit. It was the shit. I mean, all the teams I just mentioned, and that's, like I said, that's not even all of them. That's not even all of them. You could throw in more teams, you know, from the NWO. Oh, the Steiner brothers. Now, how could I forget the Steiners? Steiners are one of the greatest tag teams of all time. Got the Steiner brothers in there. Got different variations of teams from the Horsemen. I don't know how you can say that. I don't know how you can honestly say that. AEW has Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. They have FTR. They have the Lucha Bros. They have the Young Bucks. It's a very, you could even throw Jurassic Express in there. That's a really, really good tag team division. Those five teams, six teams, that right there is the strongest tag team division in wrestling today. It is not at all better than what the tag team scene looked like in the 1980s. Can't really say it any more than that. Rican Son, any ideas yet for episode 666 intro? I haven't even thought that far ahead, to be honest with you. Episode 666, is that the Mark of the Beast? That episode of The Sound Off is coming up on August 23rd. That is SummerSlam Sunday. That is one day before Vince McMahon's birthday. There is a weird kind of poetic... it's just kind of poetic that episode 666 falls basically on Vince McMahon's birthday. Didn't time it that way. That's just kind of how it worked out. But that is funny. Thomas Corrigan with the $5. Vince Russo should manage Isaiah Scott, bro. All about the swerve, bro. Yeah, Vince Russo should not be anywhere near NXT. Let's keep him away. Let's keep him away. And LPH is good, you know, in the chat. He says the 90s is the silver age of tag team wrestling. Yeah, the 90s also. You know, he had a lot of strong tag teams in the 90s as well. Now, a lot of the teams I just mentioned. Legion of Doom, Steiner Brothers, Harlem Heat. Right, you had Harlem Heat that was introduced in the 90s. Edge and Christian and the Hardys and the Dudleys. That was more... you know, those matches they had were really the end of the decade. Owen and the Bulldog. I don't think Owen Hart and the British Bulldog get enough credit for being a great tag team themselves. So, and if I had time to really sit here and think and reflect back on all the different teams that there were a lot of great tag teams, you know, those two decades. But the 80s, you're not going to get me to, you're not going to get me to vote against the 80s on that. So anyway, I don't know why I'm getting, I'm going to have to look into why I'm getting, you know, feedback in the, in the headset. Let me see if I can figure this out. Let me see if I can figure this out real quick. And if not, we may have to call it an afternoon here. Although I am loving all these different messages and these questions. So you can keep sending those in the meantime. But I'm just trying to figure out why there would be feedback that is on a delay. That has never happened before. It's probably such a simple thing, too. That's what pisses me off about this stuff. It's like, usually it's like such a simple, stupid thing. And once I end the stream, I usually figure it out. Smoking Guns. See, Smoking Guns were a good team. Smoking Guns were not an elite, great tag team by any means, but I think they were solid. You know, Smoking Guns were a solid team. APA, you know, good big man team. Beating the hell out of everybody, pretty much, right? In the late 90s, were the APA. Anyway, don't forget that on Sunday, I am going to be recording episode 661 in the morning, and then that night when the pay-per-view is over, I'm going to be right back here, hopefully without feedback, live on YouTube, and hopefully we'll get back to calls and all that fun stuff. And again, the giveaway, 6 belts. I'm giving away 6. See these 2 belts behind me? I'm not giving those away. Those were gifts, but imagine those, and then you can multiply that by 3, all right? 6 championship belts, free of charge. Well, not free of charge. It's $1 to enter. And then Wrestle Rumble will FedEx them out to you the very next day. Totally random drawing. I'm going to be picking the winners on Sunday, so I hope you guys will join me for that. And until next time, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great rest of your day here on Thursday. And I will see you right back here on Sunday night live for more Sound Off here on the YouTube channel. Take care, guys.